Good morning, everybody. It's September 3rd, 2020. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening today. We're going to talk about the reopening of schools today with good friends of mine who know what they're talking about. Okay, Jay Littman and Jill Akers Clayton both work for the wonderful architectural firm, school architectural firm of Fielding International. Okay, that firm itself consists of architects, planners, educators, and interior designers. Okay, and they try to create really new and exciting places for learning. And yes, there is a pandemic going on, and yes, schools are remote, but they are going to come back. There's a lot of articles about that, as a matter of fact, in today's New York Times. And what are they going to look like? And today we're going to talk about it from an environmental point of view, if I may do that, and designing it with safety, environmental safety. And environmental safety, I mean pandemic environmental safety in mind. So we've got Jay and Jill, the Jay and Jay twins, Jay and Jill, to talk about that. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, talk radio being one word, education-talkradio.org. And we tweet it at You Talk Radio, and we link in over at Larry Jacobs, that's me. And Facebook is Larry Jacobs or Education Talk Radio. And please go over, join our consortium for equity. We're so proud of that and the work we are doing. We want you involved. Everything's free over there, including a subscription to our online journal, which is at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's actually an acronym, the American Consortium for Equity in Education, ACE-ED. We hope you take a minute and sign up. Look at our magazine. And by the way, the back-to-school issue will be out sometime next week. Okay, actually, a week ahead of schedule, so we're really happy about that. All right, it's going to be a huge issue. All right, and you can always go over there, check it out, see what we're doing about equity over at ACE-ED. But of the magazine, the new issue will be out, but the current issue was absolutely excellent as well. You might want to catch that before it moves into the archive section. Okay, without further ado, let me bring on the J&J twins, and I got one circling here. There we go. Okay, ladies first, good morning, Jill. It's Larry.
Good morning, Larry. It's always wonderful to talk with you.
It is a pleasure to have you here, my dear, as always, and thanks for taking some time. Are you still down in Texas, right, if I'm remembering correctly, or am I wrong there?
We've recently moved to Colorado, so we are now out in the middle of nowhere.
You told me that last time, and it slipped my mind, okay? And before I bring Jay on, you have kids. What's going on with school for your kids
as we swing back? No, absolutely. My kids start school on September 8th. It's a new school for them, so they visited yesterday, and looked at all of the new spaces following the basic CDC guidelines. Then they're not required to wear masks they sit at their desks.
Wow.
They are doing the majority of their day will be outside. They've actually just launched outdoor education classes to help promote being outside, which is fantastic in that sense that they're really looking at how they use the outdoors. They've installed fans. They've made sure all their windows are operable. So we're looking forward to a good start.
Well, if they're not doing things right, they got somebody who's going to nag them to death to do so, A-E-A-U, okay? You.
Oh, yeah, you better believe it.
Yeah, what school district are we talking about?
They're in La Vida School District in southern Colorado. There's only about 250 kids in the whole district, so it's pretty small.
That's excellent, by the way. That's just excellent. I hope everything works out well with all that. Okay, and I have a feeling it will because outdoors is pretty safe, kids, et cetera. I like that. I don't know what they're going to do when it rains, but we'll figure that out as the day progresses. Buy them a good raincoat. May I recommend the main company where I live, L.L. Bean? But we'll move on from that. How's that sound? Okay?
Larry.
Right. Jay Littman, how are you, my good friend?
I'm good, Larry. I'm great. Good hearing you.
Are you sitting outside now at your desk waiting for the rain with a little umbrella over your head, or what's going on? Where are you?
Oh, it's too humid outside for that in Rhode Island today. I'm Rhode inside, Island. But I have all the fresh air ports on the air conditioner opened. So
there you go. I think you'll be safe. I think you'll be safe, and that's what we're going to be talking about here is some of the safety. And you know, and actually, Jay, let me. Why don't you just tell everybody about Fielding International? Just go into a little more detail than I did, just so they understand the expertise you're bringing to the table.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're an international firm that has 4 studios in the U.S. and 1 in Singapore. We're placed around the country, so we get a really good view of what's happening in every school district all over the place, and we've been working hard to try to get to help our client school districts figure out how they can reopen in a safe way. So it's not just safe health-wise, but it's safe and exceptional educationally.
And
you're right.
Yeah.
We have, it's an unusual firm because we're more than architects and planners. We have, you know, people like Jill is one of our senior educators. So we work, part of this challenge is trying to not just, you know, teach teachers how to exist in new kinds of schools, but now they have a whole new circumstance. A lot of teachers, there's a big difference between being on Zoom and talking with your, you know, your kids or your relatives and teaching children. And so, I mean, one of the things we're trying to do is help them come up with those kinds of strategies so that they're present in front of kids and they engage the kids. And that's a big challenge. And our firm is actually well geared to do those very things. And that's what we're doing.
Good enough. Fielding International, everybody. And it really is. And, you know, I'll use the line I've used a lot these days. People call this remote learning. And I have an argument with that. I like to call it remote education because we're not sure anybody's learning anything these days. Okay? It hasn't been proven yet. It hasn't been assessed. A lot of the school districts just said, given the grade they had when they left in March. Okay, and I know you tried your best to pass the kids. We'll see what's going on. It's not a good thing, okay? Or maybe, I don't know,
no,
maybe it is. I have no idea, but the point is we call it learning. We have to make sure the kids are learning. And what you just said, okay, is very important. This is not just a conversation on Zoom with your buddies. Excuse me, I'm going to go make another Manhattan and keep yourself busy, okay? this is education. That, I just gave away my Zoom calls with my buddies, okay? And you know, and it's can be fun, but it has to still be a learning environment. You have to make sure of that. It's hard on everybody, the kids. We won't even get into the broadband aspects and all that sort of thing. By the way, I love the fact that the school is going to be outside, Jill. But what will they do when it rains? I just have to ask that question. Have they talked about that with the parents?
Yeah, they have covered outdoor spaces. They also public library is across the street and has multiple outdoor covered spaces. And then they're building a new senior center, Catty Corner, and they have outdoor spaces. So the plan is during the rain right now, all the aspens are falling. It's supposed to drop to 25 tomorrow, and we're supposed to get our first snow.
Oh, my gosh.
So
it's Southern Colorado? Well,
yeah, pretty quick.
Wow.
But the kids will actually wear their snow gear and still spend the time outside in the snow. And in the rain, they'll use the covered community spaces for their classes, which is great. And kindergarten, they've designed it so it's outside all day.
I love it. I actually do. I got a big smile on my face now. I may sign up. What district was it? I'm ready for kindergarten again, believe me. Okay?
Right?
Sounds like a hell of a lot of fun. I got to tell you. Okay. Good luck with that. I really mean that. Good luck. We were together on June 10th last, all right? And we were talking about, you know, reopening schools, et cetera. Now we're there. We just heard about your school district, which I think is very cool. Okay? I'll swing back to Jill. Well, I can ask Jill, you can swing it to Jay if you want. There's a million different reopening scenarios, and how are you guys interacting with those? What's your sense of it right now? I'll ask Jill, you can swing it over to Jay when you're done, whatever. What's your sense of reopening? What do they need? Yeah.
I think that, you know, the scenarios that are happening right now and the way that schools are reopening, you know, they're using basic guidelines from the CDC. There's not as much of a focus on the aerosol containment, and so it's more about droplets and keeping kids separated. And so we've been spending a lot of time really thinking about our return scenarios in the sense that, you know, a vapor cloud will rise to the ceiling in each classroom and then slowly settle down. So this concentration of particles actually will spread in these spaces. So we've spent really the summer focusing on what are the mitigation strategies, creating a plan around these return scenarios so that you're looking at a way to, if you have low concentration of infection, your infection rate is low, then what are the things you can do to ramp up and bring students back to school? But with a process that if your infection rate increases or your transmission rate increases or decreases, you can switch back and forth between these return scenarios. So we're trying to give school districts a flexible strategy to return so that you can utilize all three scenarios as one opportunity to help control the transmission rate for students and develop that wellness program around this kind of work.
And what are, you said something, and I might have missed something. What are the three scenarios you're talking about?
Absolutely. So we've designed
three
scenarios.
If I missed that, I apologize.
No, I
just wanted to clear it up. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think I mentioned it. I just probably assumed that you were in my head and you could go along with the committee in there and figure it out, right? So we have an alternating return scenario, which is a hybrid model where you have 50% of the students in the building at any given time. Now, if your transmission rate is low, we've got a full return scenario that allows for approximately 95% in-person attendance. And then if you have a high rate of transmission, we also have a flexible return scenario, which allows for approximately 20% in-person attendance for students who cannot partake or do distance learning at home. So special ed programs, families who their parents are required to be hospital workers, government workers, things like that, and using the building in a flexible way and creating spaces that reduce the amount of connection between certain cohorts of students, but for those who are required workers and have special needs, creating that flexible return scenario. So all three of those scenarios together really make up our return to school strategy so that they're all a single return strategy that either says we can increase the gas and speed forward to getting all of those kids back into school, or we can really put our foot on the brakes and say, "Ooh, let's look at this transition rate, put on the brakes, and remove kids from the space to keep them safe." Jay, you want to add to that?
Jay, before you go forward, I just want to. You created in my mind a scenario to use that word again. That's stuck there now. Okay, of a cloud of COVID gathering in the ceiling of the classroom and then eventually raining down on people. The picture was not good in my mind. Okay, and I just want to stay with Jill for a second, or maybe Jay wants to take this. That could happen anywhere. Okay, and I just wanted to say, how do you mitigate that? Keep the windows open, and what are you recommending for filtration to keep that to a minimum? And Jill, I'll ask you that. If you want to swing it over to Jay, you're welcome to.
Yeah, it's a great question, and we have to really think about those environmental priorities. And we've been working with some consultants over at Creative Environments Corporation to really think about how we focus on ventilation and providing the resources and the tools for our districts and schools to properly ventilate their spaces. And this is where I will hand it over to Jay, because I've got all those educator acronyms down, and he's got all those ventilator acronyms down.
Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, well, so the big thing that's happened, I think, so you mentioned we talked to you last in June, and all summer long there's been scientists working in overdrive. Lindsay Marr and her team from out of Virginia, and we've been lucky enough to be getting a lot of these abstracts early, ahead of everybody else, before they were officially published. And one of the big ones was that this breakthrough that Jill had mentioned, that, and Time Magazine just wrote about it last week, that the primary infection vector for COVID, I hope everyone's listening carefully to this, and you can read it in the Time Magazine article, is aerosols.
Right.
That's how
right.
tuberculosis is spread, by the way. That was the breakthrough in treatment of tuberculosis, not droplets. It's not a fomite spread, which means you touch something and then you touch it and you get it. Those are minimal in COVID. It's all about aerosols. That's why people, you know, going to karaoke parties and going to political rallies are coming down with it at a high level of contagion, because you sing, you shout, you create a huge monster cloud of this aerosol in the air, and then as you sing and breathe, you suck it back in. And so that has a huge implication on how you treat and how you work and how you prepare classrooms. So, and you started to mention some of it, Larry. There's sort of three factors in making classrooms safe. And we've been pushing this in Rhode Island and in other places, and sending, as I said, the kind of directives out to other school districts around the world that we work with. Most of the world is still classrooms, as we've talked about in past, you know, meetings. And in a room, if you follow the CDC guidelines as they stand right now, you're going to set up a whole bunch of desks, a nice grid in rows with plastic barriers in between them. Well, what that does is it allows the aerosol, which is what is actually happening, to rise up in the air, drift down into each one of these little like ice cube trays, and every single kid can be nicely uniform infected. And it's horrifying to us because they're not changing.
It's a bad picture.
Only a few.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one's reading the science. The science says you want to do a couple of things. The strategies are, don't put kids in little rows. Do what we call uneven grouping. And, of course, in a Fielding International School, we don't have classrooms, as you remember. We have large learning communities,
right,
with common spaces and smaller rooms. And the kids circulate through those areas. And the idea is to keep everyone moving while you do ventilation, filtration, and protection. So that means every kid has to wear a mask. Every teacher has to wear a mask.
I just want to stop you. You're talking about an indoor space, right? Indoor space?
Yes, absolutely.
Outdoor spaces, not so much. Indoor spaces, absolutely, you have to have a mask. Every occupant of the space has to have a mask. In the meantime, the other thing to remember is most American schools, most schools all over the world, in fact, have either a unit ventilator, which is every room has a box that sticks out a snoot to the outside wall, sucks in a little bit of air, and then pumps air up into the room. That's not ventilation. That's just pumping air into a room. A lot of schools don't even have windows that operate anymore. Since the 90s, engineers have been asking everything to be sealed, so that's a big problem. So all of these older schools, we'll call the older school anything built before the year 2000 in most cases, does not have operable windows or good ventilation.
I want to stop you right there. I didn't know this. So you're saying that schools built, let's say, since the year 2000, okay, most of them have operable windows? I actually don't know the answer to that.
That's when
Is
the
that
trend started again. Yeah, that's when the trend started.
Okay,
again.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. I thought they were all sealed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they were all sealed.
Thought
about it.
Some probably still are, but most of the ones that we've worked on since then, there was a requirement that every window operate.
Cool.
So what happens
that's
is that
important.
So the strategy is you have to have something that's going to take the air that's being breathed out by everybody and the air that's being pumped into the room and pull it up high into the room. So that gets it away from the kids. You have to have exhaust out one window at one end of the room at the top. So it's pulling all the kind of potentially infected air out. Remember now, everyone wearing a mask, they can't breathe it in and they can't effectively throw it out into the room. So you've got a lot of that protection already in place. But for what's left, you want to get that air out and then lower in the room. You want to be with another fan intake, pushing air into the room. Modern schools, like the ones we just did, we talked about previously, like in Cranston, Rhode Island, has a modern system that automatically filters the air in system, and is ventilating the air room by room. All the ductwork is sealed. In a traditional older school, what happens is that the air is pumped into the room. And then where does the air go? The hallways, the corridors have negative air pressure, and they're basically taking all the air that's in the room and eventually it gets sucked out into the hallways. That makes our hallways in our American schools sewers of virus.
Yeah. does.
If a kid is really infected and the mist is there, if you walk out in the hallway, you're just walking into a pool of infected air going by you before it gets sucked up into the ceiling, back into the system. And, of course, without filtration, you have a problem. So we're recommending that every room, every traditional classroom has a HEPA-based filter system up at the ceiling. So you're trying your best to do a few things. Viral particles, the density of the viral particles, it contributes to how fast and how effectively other people get infected if they're there. So what you want to do is you want to dilute the air with fresh air. You want to ventilate the room so you have a way of getting the air out, not pumping it into the hallway. You want to filter air that is in at the ceiling. And then the last thing, which is the trickiest thing, and one of the reasons it's tricky, by the way, is because America doesn't have a manufacturing capability to make all this equipment. If a single high school has 1,000 rooms, imagine what a school district the size of Philadelphia might have, or Boston might have, or even a little city like Cranston, Rhode Island. It would be like 10,000 rooms. Who's got that equipment? Nobody. So what happens is that you try to do your best to dilute, to have people wear masks, to get a HEPA filter to take this out. If you have an induct system, there's different kinds of filter packets you can put in duct. And so a good school system, for instance, the Pathfinder project that we talked about earlier in the season, again in Cranston, because we were using that as our proof point, they just have to upgrade the filters. That's it. They have to do anything else. Everyone else has to run around creating Rube Goldberg contraptions in their rooms, because the bottom line is our American schools are not designed for health. They're simply not designed for health. And so just throwing this out there, the good side of this pandemic, if there's any good side, is I take it to, like, if you use a tree and you say the tree with all its old branches and old leaves, that's all the old practices of the 20th century. And what COVID is doing is just shaking the heck out of that tree, knocking the branches down, shaking all the old dead leaves out, so we have a tree that now can grow in the 21st century. So everything's going to change. But that's what you have to do. It's easy. It's actually easy with just a couple of fans and masks. You can reduce the incidence and the chance of getting infection to a high degree. The problem is most school districts are following their state departments of health, which in turn follow the CDC. And CDC, as a Time magazine article said, is way out of step. And they're not helping anybody right now by pushing, practices that, made sense in May when we knew nothing. But they somehow haven't been able to catch up with the research and the technology. That's why we're really happy the Time magazine article came out. Somebody's reading it somewhere and saying, oh, my God, everything has to change. All the practices have to change.
They really do.
Hey,
no,
Jay, I just had an element.
Go ahead, Jill, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, Jay, I just had a lifelong elementary school teacher respond to your tree analogy. She said, actually, COVID's like the forest fire that's whipping through the forest, burning out all the old stuff to actually make room for new growth. And that's really what happens in these big redwood forests. So, we're making room for new growth.
Violent,
that's the paradigm shift.
Yeah, she's right. She's absolutely right. Yeah.
That would be Debbie Swofford.
Thank you, Debbie Allen.
Wow.
Okay, for that.
Debbie
I appreciate
Allen, the
that.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a choreographer, a famous one, Debbie Allen. Okay.
Debbie
she
Allen.
Was beautiful. Yep. Okay. From Fame, I might add, the movie Fame. There you go. Okay.
That's right.
But there you go, guys. See, I got good movie trivia here. All right.
Hey.
I got to ask you a question, Jay. You might be able to answer this. Okay. Minimum, because all the things you're saying are great. So meanwhile, a lot of people are out of work, okay? They won't be able to pay their taxes. Schools are based on taxes. You know how that works, okay? But everybody's worried the school budgets, okay, are going to be seriously slashed. And by the way, Joe Biden made a speech about this, I think, yesterday, okay, that we got to put some money into the schools to make this to make them safe, all right? That nobody's talking about that on a national level. But to just get away from politics, I don't mean that politically, but I mean it's something we're going to talk about here. But I'm curious, Jay, and you'll know this, what is the cost, the minimum cost, I'll say per classroom, this typical just put a classroom in your head, what would it cost to do a classroom to make it safe? Minimally safe. Yeah, so what you just said.
I'm thinking, how much? $25,000. If you and I went in on a weekend and did it, it would probably cost them about $3,000 or $4,000. But every single school has to use union labor. They have to bid the thing.
Yeah.
By the time you get done with all the tax and tip, you're like way up there. And if you have to put in, like for instance, there are ceiling fans you can buy that have, I was going to say UVC, you know, ultraviolet containment in the fins. I mean, to buy that would be $2,000. Then you have to wire everything up. Most classrooms are underpowered with electricity. There's so many compound problems in old schools. And we know because we're talking with several school districts that are going through these challenges. They're not wired up to send out, you know, like remote signals at the level that, and their Wi-Fi systems aren't robust enough to do it. So you got all those expenses. You have to bring more power sometimes into the building in general to run fans, to run HEPA filters. That's another major expense. Then you have to buy the equipment. Then you need to have the union labor to put it up. You have to have the kids temporarily move to another location as you fix these schools up. So, yeah, if you wanted to do a good job, $25,000. If you wanted to do a real, shot by the seat of your pants, you can probably go to Granger's, so go to the Granger's catalog. And we know that there's two kinds of, you can buy a special fan with a rheostat, and reverse it. And get one in a lower window, one in an upper window. If that's all you got, Larry, that would make a huge difference. So the bottom line, if you just did one thing, it's get fresh air into the room and stale air out of the room, outside the building, not into the corridor. That price with the electricity is probably, I'm going to guess, like $5,000 to do it. Again, the equipment's the cheapest part. It's getting the labor. And then you have to do the bidding process and everything. It's the same as affordable housing in the U.S. It's an oxymoron because the regulations make it too expensive to be affordable. And then all the union rates you need. And union, it's important because you want to employ everybody. But, yeah, the bottom line is going to be probably $5,000 at a minimum and $25,000 if you want to do everything right. And, of course, you multiply that by all the classrooms and then all the spaces in the corridor. We don't even know how you'd go about cleaning those up. I mean, you don't want kids to be in a corridor. So it's turning out that the cells and bells model that we keep talking about is not a good model for the 21st century when we're thinking of health and pandemics. Remember, when we were growing up, if one kid got measles, every kid got measles in the classroom.
You're right.
And it's because of the same ventilation problems, but no one was aware of it. School should be the healthiest place to send your kid, not the most disastrous in terms of infectious diseases. We don't design schools for this, and that's going to change now because of all this.
There's
a big reckoning.
Yeah, the problem, and you said even $5,000 a classroom. I mean, the reckoning is with dollars. Okay, and people say, "Oh, I won't spare any expense for the safety of my kids." My thing is, they probably will do the exact opposite of what we should do. We've got to make sure. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to say all this stuff, all right? But
not to get on a high political horse again or anything, but we've said this in the past, America is going to need, no matter who the president is, I do have a preference, but whatever the president is.
That was good.
I wonder who that could possibly be.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, we're gonna need an American Education Recovery Act. They're gonna have to put trillions of dollars into this. There's 100,000 schools in the U.S. 90% of them or more are grossly out of date in every way.
And that's
just
for warm, safe, and dry. That's not even
for warm, safe, innovative
paradigm practices that really support the networking type of model that we need to develop, virtual and in-person kind of learning experiences that are going to change the way that we educate kids. The warm, safe, and dry can't only be part of that recovery act. The investment actually has to be in the future of our country if we want to see kids thrive in an equitable and accessible way.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more, and that's always been the argument. All right, and we're always fighting for this. You know, I get on my soapbox. You know, we don't need another 200,000 stupid tanks. We got plenty of tanks with the Army. They don't even want the tanks. They say no, thank you. That was a pun, but you get my point. All right,
and you're picking up what you're putting down, Larry.
Yeah, you know. So it's time we made a change, but we've been fighting that argument for years. And I want you just to talk about this for a second. This is key. They're talking about getting a vaccine in October. Whether or not that's going to work, who knows? Okay, but let's should schools put all this money and time into this now for something that may be curable by October, November, December? What's your thoughts on what happens after we get rid of COVID? And by the way, I know what your answer is going to be, and I agree with you. But please go ahead, Jill or Jay.
Jay, I'll start, and then you can finish up.
Go ahead.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm going to go with Debbie Allen's comment around, you know, we're burning this forest down and it's time for regrowth. So regardless whether we get a vaccine or not, the Education Recovery Act has to be an investment in this country's future, because we have pulled back this iron curtain and exposed such a whirlwind of deficits that we have never confronted before in our society, based on race, equity, and how we provide access to our students.
That's right.
So I think regardless of what happens with COVID or a vaccine or politically, it's time to truly address and confront what's happening in our nation. Jay, I'm going to hand it to you.
I hope we can do that. I hope we can do that.
I know,
yeah,
me too.
I think,
go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, this is, I think COVID, is at, whether we use a forest fire or shaking the tree, This is the pivot point, I think, where we leave the 20th century and we enter the 21st century. Ironically, you know, World War One was the real pivot point where, you know, Americans, not just Americans, everyone around the world realized 19th century is dead, 20th century is here, and we ushered in the Roaring 20s. And plus, you know, we capped World War One with the Spanish flu. Here, you know, I would say, you know, COVID, along with maybe a disastrous presidency, has created a real breakpoint where everything from race relations to the way we look at news and science to the Constitution to, you know, a worldwide pandemic, which shows that, you know, something can spread in less than 3 weeks around the entire world, affecting every single school on Earth, every single economy on Earth, every single person on Earth. And it means that we have to have a new way of looking at things in terms of who we are, how we work with each other. And, you know, in the guise of schools, every single standard about schools has to change, not just the Sells and Bells model, but, you know, the priorities for how we keep people healthy, you know, making healthy environments. I think anything that we invest in schools, those fans better keep running. Because there's going to be a flu season. There's going to be another pandemic in a couple of years. I mean, I can see, you know, a COVID-22 very easily, because the way these things mutate, you just don't know. And this is a very volatile disease that can change. So, I mean, it's certainly making as big a change in the way we develop vaccines, for instance, as AIDS did in the 1980s and 90s. You know, I mean, the way that the science expands exponentially every time it has a challenge. And I think, you know, school design now has to expand exponentially to meet this challenge, because now we're looking at there will be a future where we are going to constantly have remote or virtual learning. I'd like to call it virtual learning, because I don't think it's actually remote. If it's done well, it's virtual learning. Someone will be putting on a helmet, you know, lightweight helmet with a visor, and they will be in a rainforest with everyone else in their class by, you know, 2025.
It's already had, so a lot of it's happening already. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jill and I have been talking about, you know, that a new program element in schools, for instance, will wind up being virtual studios, where everyone in the classroom will go into a place where they don't bump into each other, but they can actually move and walk around. I mean, we do this in our office now. When we explore the insides of buildings that we're designing, we actually put on a big headset and walk around. So I'm thinking, this is the moment where we realize that schools can be so much more, and schools on a base level have to be so much more for health and welfare. So yeah, all the stuff we're doing now is going to stay. We're designing, hopefully, assuming the bond passes, in Cranston, Rhode Island, new schools. And those schools are going to be designed to have everything that
all
you
this
need
in mind.
To,
yeah.
Right, with all
with
this
in
mind on day one. Yep.
Yeah, and your thing
and I
with
think
the
there's
helmet.
A whole new world coming.
Yeah, your thing with the helmet reminds me of the holodeck Star Trek, Next Generation.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Or
if you haven't seen it, Ready Player One. That
I saw it, and I loved Ready Player One. Much to my surprise, I loved Ready Player One. Okay, I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, it
really is a Steven Spielberg film, and I really loved it. I heartily recommend that to everybody. If you want to see a good film.
Yep.
You know, Fielding Nares, Fielding International is also engaged in, involved
old
in
habit.
A film festival called This Is Our Chance. And we're putting on a virtual film festival about the intersection of equity, education, and youth empowerment. And what
Where and when?
It is it's all virtual. It's October 6th through the 12th. And it's about how our schools mirror our culture and how these two pandemics have permeated this culture and around the world. And that we need to reimagine school and address both pandemics and build this into a collective thinking issue. I mean, it's really, how do we start that Education Recovery Act? And so we're doing it. This Is Our Chance Film Festival. It starts in early October. It starts October 6th through the 12th.
This is your thing? This is your thing?
It's a group of us, of ed leaders in different organizations, from around the country, and Fielding International is one of the sponsors as well. We also
I never heard of this.
We just launched it. It's with XQ Schools, Next Generation Learning Challenge, Embark Education, Education Reimagined. Have you heard of 100Ed, the global innovation program?
No.
Oh, I'll send all this to you, Larry. We're focusing globally how we can do and really reimagine what we're doing with school in a virtual way, and we're doing it through a series of films over 3 weeks. And we've got we had a school leader in Wisconsin who's signing his entire district and hopefully a consortium of districts in Wisconsin up already. And so really, how do we collectively do it with our consortium too.
We'll do it with our equity consortium, okay? I didn't know anything about this. Can you send me all the information, and we'll put together more podcasts to make sure people know about this. And also, we'll get some
–
I didn't even see any press releases or anything on this. This is exciting.
Well, you know what?
I'm glad you brought it up, Jill.
Me too. We literally just launched our website 2 days ago and put our media kits and all of that together. So I will
What's the website?
It's our-chance.com.
Okay.
And so really, this is our chance, and we're going to launch this through a film festival. And we've got some films that everything is free to register for, and films that haven't even come out yet that we're launching.
Well, we're
going to
be talking
festival.
About this we're going to almost done here now, but I'm going to follow up with you and Jay on this, okay? And our consortium for equity, I can tell you right now, would really like to be involved in this.
That is wonderful.
Great.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know about it until just now. This is really cool. We'll get the word out for you. We talked to a lot of people.
It's our dash chance.
Breaking
news.
Yeah,
it is breaking news. Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe we can even get something. It's tight. Let me see if I can get something at least in the magazine about it. But we'll certainly get it online. So please, okay, and we'll have it at ace-ed.org. Please send me whatever you have today.
I'll send it all to you right after the show.
Perfect. All right, and I'll get back to you later
also,
this afternoon on it. Yes, quickly, my friend.
Great.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that also all the things that we're talking about with all the return scenarios and how they work, If people visit our website at Fielding, FIELDINGINTL, shortfor international.com.
Yeah.
Right on our webpage, it'll have the COVID resiliency. If they click onto that, they'll go into the whole, like, giant world of all of these measures, how they work, what the science is. And I think the other plug is that we're working with VS Furniture right now to be putting out both a virtual book in a week or so, and then we're actually putting out a bound book by October that goes way into depth on this stuff, which you'll be getting copies of too, and we'll send you all the stuff as it occurs. We're in the process of finishing up the virtual book right now, and they're a partner of ours. We use a lot of their furnishings in a lot of our projects.
Yeah, I want you to introduce me to them. I want to talk to those folks.
Sure.
Okay, so
yeah,
introduce me to them. We'll talk a little bit later. We got to close down this show. We're starting to run short of time here. This
sure.
is really good. By the way, I did just go to the website our-chance.com. Please send me all that information. I wish I had known this a week ago, but let's see what we can do for you. Okay.
Awesome.
This is right where we want to be. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yes.
We'll devote a whole show to that, a whole podcast to that, right at the beginning of October. How's that sound?
Oh, my gosh, that would be fantastic. We would
be
so grateful.
Yeah, all you got to do is ask.
Awesome.
Okay, and I'm so glad you brought it up. So let's work together on that, and I got to say goodbye to you both now because we're running out of time.
Larry, it's
sure.
always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I can't wait to be in Philly and get to meet you.
Yeah, don't be to Philly. I'm in Maine.
Oh, well, I like Maine much better than Philly, so that works
great
for me.
But the steak sandwiches are better in Philly. And on that note, I got to go somewhere to
But you and Jay grew up in Philly.
Yeah, we
so
both
I
grew up in Philly. That's
yeah.
right.
Philly.
We both headed
yep.
north.
That's right.
Okay. We got to go. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Larry. Bye.
Bye.
Yep.
Bye, Jay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Okay. right. Fielding International. Fielding INTL, like international. And also our-chance.com. Okay. Check it all out. It's all there. This is important stuff. We'll do more in this film festival thing. I just found out about this. Okay. And thank you for being with us today. I got to run. Okay. Please go over to ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Join with us on our equity consortium. And I can't thank you enough, Jay and Jill, the J folks, okay, from Fielding International.